My guest at this time is Edwin Meese III. He's a former Attorney General of the United States in the Reagan administration, but his affiliation with President Reagan goes all the way back to Reagan's days as the governor of California. He also served, of course, as a counselor to the president in his first term in the White House, was part of the famous Troika, and later, of course, as the Attorney General of the United States. He's now a distinguished fellow with the Heritage Foundation here in Washington. And as the nation observes what would have been President Reagan's 100th birthday, we want to get some of Mr. Meese's reflections on his many years alongside the former governor and former president. It's a great honor to be with you.
Thank you. It's good to be with you and your listeners.
Thank you, sir. When I look back at your affiliation with Ronald Reagan, basically someone else suggested that he hire you to work in his office when he first became governor of California, and you were a bit reluctant to do that, but obviously over the years, this turned out to be an incredible political partnership. What was it about the two of you that you clicked so well?
Well, I think one thing is we both had similar ideas on the Constitution, on political philosophy, and on the practical policies. I was particularly impressed with him the first time I met him. As you pointed out, someone had recommended me. I didn't find out who it was too much later. It was actually a state legislator that knew of some of the work I'd done early on, the early 60s, with the state legislature on behalf of district attorneys and chiefs of police in California. So I was asked to come up to Sacramento to meet the new governor-elect. He came in. We talked for about a half hour. I was so impressed both by his personality but also how much he knew about criminal law and some of the subjects I was interested in. I'd been in the district attorney's office at that point for about 8 years in Alameda County in Oakland, California, in Berkeley. When we started talking about specific issues like how you handled the death penalty cases, how you handled what was then the increasing disruptions on college campuses, and some of those things, our ideas meshed, and when he offered me the job at the end of the half-hour meeting, I was surprised, in a sense, that he'd offered it so quickly, but I accepted on the spot, and that was the start of a great opportunity for me.
Well, you served as his chief of staff there for a number of years, of course, and that was not exactly an uneventful stretch when he was governor of California, from some of the riots to all the demonstrations on campus. His most likely signature domestic achievement, of course, was welfare reform. His greatest regret, of course, was the expansion of abortion legislation there and the laws on that front. What did you see in him throughout those different debates and crises that gave you an idea that he could be of presidential timber?
Well, I think there were several things. Number one, he was a genuine leader. He had a vision of where he wanted to go in these various areas. He had thought about it carefully. He made good decisions. He was also an easy person to work with and to get along with people. He was genuine in the sense that he would be the same person when he was talking with me privately in his office or if he was giving a talk to 10,000 people. He didn't have one persona for intimates, people working close to him, and another for the general public. It was that sincerity which I think communicated itself first to the people of California and then to the nation and indeed to the world.
You mentioned that from your first interview with him that he had a depth of ideas that I think, at least either the way the press portrayed it or his political adversaries portrayed it, that he wasn't as deep on some of the key issues of the day. Just how carefully did he study those and how integral was that to what eventually became policy?
Well, I think it was very important. He did study, he worked hard, but he never gave off the impression, either as governor or as president, that he had the world on his the burdens of the world on his shoulders. He had a light touch in terms of the way in which he dealt with things as far as the public was concerned, but his seemingly effortless way of handling things was really the result of hard work and good deal of preparation so that he was in command of the facts of different issues, in command also of how he could communicate those issues to the public. And I think all of this made for a very successful presidency, plus his optimism and his cheerfulness, which were kind of the hallmarks of his leadership.
He, of course, ran for president in 1976, narrowly lost the nomination to President Ford. You came in at a pretty critical time in the 1980 campaign when things were looking kind of dicey after he had been a prohibitive favorite. And obviously the campaign turned around when there were critical concerns about his age at the time. He was nearly 70 years old. What was it in that 1980 campaign that you were perhaps able to focus the campaign on, or he just seized on naturally that helped him to not only win the nomination, but obviously win the general election pretty convincingly?
Well, I think that prior to February, when we had a change in the campaign structure, I think some of the people that were working with us at that time weren't quite as sure of Ronald Reagan's capabilities as those of us who had known him for a longer time were. And as a result, they also came from the East. They had, in some ways, a different view of government, certainly a different view of politics, whereas Ronald Reagan was the kind of a public official candidate who really believed in being very direct with the public, and that this was not kind of a game for inside politics, but rather an effort to explain his views to the public, and then he felt that the decisions by the voters would take care of themselves. So what he did was, having lost in the Iowa caucuses, where the strategy of his then campaign director was to remain aloof from the campaign and take advantage of his supposed front-running strategy, instead, in New Hampshire, he took command of the campaign himself and literally campaigned directly to the people. He would be out every day, five and six, sometimes eight events a day. He met with people in fire halls, in city government buildings, in restaurants sometimes, and in the Elks Lodge, different places like that, sometimes even in people's homes. And as a result, he conducted a real grassroots campaign, which then turned the whole effort to be elected president in a very different direction.
We're talking with former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, a longtime aide to Governor and then President Reagan. And, of course, a lot of people today, sir, believe that Ronald Reagan was really one of the last people to successfully bring in a big way all three legs of the stool of conservatism, economic, social, and foreign policy. He was one of the first Republicans, especially at the top of the national stage, to not be kind of the green eyeshade type, but he believed that sweeping tax cuts were the best way to revitalize a difficult economy. It took a couple of years for that to kick in, and then, of course, it boomed. Talk about his confidence in that approach to job creation.
Well, he knew that basically four things were necessary if we were going to get out of the economic crisis that he found and which really helped to elect him. The people needed a new direction, and he provided it with the tax rate reductions for all Americans, not the kind of thing that separated people into different groups, for regulatory reform to lessen the intrusiveness of the federal government where it didn't belong, stable monetary policies, and then slowing the growth of federal spending. And he accomplished all of these things, ending the crisis, but also starting the longest period of peacetime economic growth in the history of the country.
In terms of foreign policy, he also took on a very different tack than members of either party, really. Containment had been the strategy for years, and he believed that the Cold War was actually winnable and certainly found a lot of opposition to that in his own party and certainly in the Democratic Party. What convinced him that that was doable?
Well, he had studied communism for a long time. He had actually defeated communism in this country when he was president of the Screen Actors Guild, and the Communist Party USA tried to take over that industry to use it for propaganda. He, along with other heads of unions, actually defeated the communists, kept them from taking it over. That started him studying the subject, and he was well-versed in both international and domestic communism when he became president. And so he had the vision and the understanding of the deficiencies within the Soviet Union, particularly the fact that they were using a great deal of their annual gross domestic product to support their military at the expense of the people within the Soviet Union itself, as well as he knew that simply oppressing the people within Russia, for example, but also in the captive nations, could not last forever. And so he knew that there was the seeds of vulnerability within the oppressive communist system and Marxism, and therefore he knew that by utilizing a variety of our capabilities, economic, military, diplomatic, and political, that we could, in fact, win the Cold War, as you suggest.
But a lot of people say perhaps in addition or even beyond what we've just talked about, his ability to make America believe in itself again was perhaps among, if not his greatest accomplishment. Was it just his natural gifts as an orator? What went into him being so successful in convincing Americans that we were as good as he thought we were?
I think it was two things. Number one, I think it was his study and understanding of our history. He was a great student of the founders. He believed in the Constitution and our constitutional system. And also, he had been a leader, military officer, actually, during World War II. He saw what we were able to accomplish as a united nation at that time and with that kind of unity, and he saw that we could do the same thing. In World War II, we had the industrial ability to support the military capabilities, and that oneness of effort was successful. And that's really what he translated into the economic arena as well as the foreign policy arena in the 1980s.
You mentioned before your first meeting with then-Governor Reagan, and what a great connection you had ever since then. Is there a single story that usually comes to mind when you think about your personal and professional relationship with Ronald Reagan?
Well, I think, there are many, many episodes, many incidents that occurred. I think it was the way in which he handled things as president, a tremendous job, but the way he was able to work with his cabinet to utilize the information that was brought together by them, his method of decision-making in which he would get all the facts possible and then make firm decisions and then carry through with them. I think all of these traits were an important part of it. The one thing that I remember particularly was what he did at Reykjavik. I was not there, but the fact that he was able to turn down all the blandishments of Mikhail Gorbachev, cutting weapons systems, if he would give up on the Strategic Defense Initiative, the missile defense program that he had initiated. And it was the fact that he stood firm on principle, which ultimately I think was one of the key factors that led to the winning the Cold War and the implosion of the Soviet Union.
Sir, one of the things, of course, we're hearing about today is the need for civility in politics, and a lot of folks hearken back to what they believe was the great civility between the president, Ronald Reagan, and the Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, and they say that that was an era, a bygone era, when everybody seemed to get along, even though they disagreed strenuously on policy. That seems to be romanticizing the history of that a little bit. What is it that you remember about that era, and what do you make of the fact that now, so many years later, even Democrats, for the most part, have only good things to say about Ronald Reagan?
Well, I think part of it was his cheerfulness and his own civility. But I must say, what you mentioned romanticism, I don't think people remember very well how hard-fought some of those battles were and how tough the news media, for example, was on Ronald Reagan. Some of the ways that they talked about him as though he were going to hurt the poor, various other things. But I think that there's no question about his own cheerfulness and optimism, and particularly his willingness to respect others, including his opponents.
And finally, sir, 100 years from now, when it's 200 years since his birth, what do you think the history books will note most about Ronald Reagan?
Well, I hope it will be that he did the things that you mentioned at a critical time in our nation's history, that he revitalized the economy, that he rebuilt our military defenses and led us back to restoring our position of world leadership, that he put into effect the forces that led to the end of the Cold War with the West and the forces of freedom winning, and reviving the spirit of the American people. I think that he did all those things and did it with a smile is what I hope the American people will remember.
Well, we certainly appreciate you helping us remember at this important occasion. Mr. Meese, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Edwin Meese III, former Attorney General of the United States, counselor to President Reagan as well. He also served as Governor Reagan's chief of staff. Mr. Meese is now a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation in Washington.